Come out to the front of the museum. There, for the first time, hundreds of people from other Smithsonian museums marched across the mall in solidarity with this museum. And there were people who brought flowers just to put in front of the museum as if to counter the pain and the curse of that. And it taught me something. I had never seen the Smithsonian come together like that. And I had also realized that no action of hate or terror would undermine what we accomplished. In fact, what we accomplished would illuminate that hate and the terror in a way that those that hate wouldn't want it to be understood. So that was a really dark day, but the way people responded made it one of the days I'll never forget.
Lonnie Bunch, Secretary of the Smithsonian, in a February 2020 interview. The Smithsonian Institution is the world's largest museum, education, and research complex with 21 museums, 14 education and research centers, and the National Zoo. He was also the founding director of the National Museum of African American History and Culture. I interviewed him at Busboys and Poets in Washington, D.C. on the occasion of the release of his book, A Fool's Errand, Creating the National Museum of African American History and Culture in the Age of Bush, Obama, and Trump. It was February 2020, shortly before the start of the pandemic. Earlier this week, President Trump said the Smithsonian Institution was too narrowly focused on the negative aspects of U.S. history, including, quote, how bad slavery was. That does it for the show. To see the whole interview with Lonnie Bunch, you can go to democracynow.org. I'll be back at Busboys and Poets September 7th interviewing Andy Shalal. I'm Amy Goodman. Thanks for joining us.
You're listening to KBOO Portland at 90.7 FM.
Cable Community Radio's annual meeting and board election will be held on Saturday, September 20th at 11:30 a.m. at Mississippi Studios in North Portland. At the annual meeting, members will have the opportunity to meet candidates running in the board election. Final votes will be cast and counted. The results of the elections will be announced at the end of the meeting. Online voting is open now through the annual meeting at cable.fm/board25. Paper ballots will be sent to members by mail. Again, that's Cable's annual meeting and board election on Saturday, September 20th at 11:30 a.m. at Mississippi Studios, located at 3939 North Mississippi Avenue in Portland. More information can be found at cable.fm/board25.
On the next episode of NeuroEmergent, I talk with Leah Blankenship, founder of the Neurodiversity Alliance at the University of Oregon.
Running a group entirely with neurodivergent people, it comes with its own challenges. So much of what defines academic success for these students is just being a successful adult.
Join us at 11 a.m. Wednesday, August 27th, for a conversation about neurodiversity from a Gen Z perspective.
And now, your daily volunteer-produced community newscast, the KBOO Evening News.
Coming up on the KBOO Evening News, it's one of Oregon's leading economic engines, a special report on how Trump wants to invest in Intel. Pacific Northwest Congresswomen hold a trio of town halls, and dangerous heat is on our way. Good evening. This is the KBOO Evening News for Thursday, August 21st, 2025. I'm Minette Newell. Thanks for joining us tonight. Intel consistently ranks as Oregon's largest for-profit private employer, with around 20,000 workers in the state as of 2024, before a recent round of layoffs impacting about 2,400 of them. Intel's operations in Oregon have a significant impact on the state's economy. It contributes substantially to Oregon's GDP and has made billions of dollars in capital investments in the state. Now, Intel and the Trump administration have been having a bit of back and forth recently, and the president wants a stake in the company. KBOO's Josh Salem tells us more.
The Trump administration wants a piece of Oregon's largest private employer, making that a condition for sending already promised federal funding. Commerce Secretary Howard Lutnick confirmed with CNBC yesterday that the government is seeking an equity stake in chipmaker Intel. Lutnick said it would be a requirement for receiving funding under the CHIPS Act, which Congress approved in 2022. He said, quote, "It's not governance. We're just converting what was a grant under Biden into equity for the Trump administration, for the American people, non-voting," end quote. In 2024, the Biden administration awarded Intel $1.8 billion to upgrade parts of its Hillsborough campus. The company apparently considers that facility to be the heart of its research and development for semiconductors and other technology. Intel employs about 18,000 people in Oregon. The company was awarded almost $8 billion from the CHIPS Act. The legislation was meant to catalyze domestic production of the computer chips powering everyday electronics and was ceded to efforts in Arizona, Ohio, and Oregon. Now, Intel says those plans will have to slow down as the company tries to trim costs. Intel has already lost ground to other major chip makers in the fields of AI and smartphones. The Trump administration's effort to acquire a stake drew immediate condemnation from Democratic Senator Ron Wyden. Wyden said, quote, "This is nothing more than corporate extortion from Donald Trump and his cabinet of bobbleheads, acting more like a mob family squeezing out protection money than an administration working in our economy's best interests." He added, quote, "The last thing any U.S. company needs right now, on top of Trump's chaotic tariff roller coaster, is to have its business future steered by this man who's much more familiar with casino bankruptcies than in sound business decisions," end quote. Earlier this month, Donald Trump accused Intel CEO Lip-Bu Tan of being highly conflicted. Tan responded publicly that Intel was investing in U.S. facilities in ways that will benefit the American economy. For KBOO News, I'm Josh Salem.
Trump attacked the Smithsonian and other American museums in a social media post, saying that he's instructing his attorneys to investigate museum installations. KBOO's Hannah Francis has more on the story.
President Donald Trump has ramped up his criticism of the Smithsonian Institution. In a late-night post on his social media platform, he declared, "The museums in Washington and all over the country are, quote, the last remaining segment of woke," end quote. Trump described the Smithsonian as, quote, out of control, and indicated that other museums might soon face similar scrutiny. In a statement to NPR, the White House said, quote, "President Trump will explore all options and avenues to get the woke out of Smithsonian and hold them accountable. He will start with the Smithsonian and then go from there," end quote. Trump expressed frustration in a social media post that the Smithsonian is apparently not willing to overlook the United States' horrifying history of genocide, colonialism, and slavery. Trump's post accused the Smithsonian of focusing only on negative aspects of American history and, quote, "how horrible our country is, how bad slavery is, and how unaccomplished the downtrodden have been. Nothing about success, nothing about brightness, nothing about future. We are not going to allow this to happen, and I have instructed my attorneys to go through the museums and start the exact same process that has been done with colleges and universities, where tremendous work has been made. This country cannot be woke because woke is broke. We have the hottest country in the world, and we want people to talk about it, including our museums," end quote. In response, several museums and historical associations have voiced concerns over what the American Alliance of Museums describes as growing threats on censorship against U.S. museums. The AAM issued a statement on August 15th, noting, quote, "This is not just a concern for select institutions. These pressures can create a chilling effect across the entire museum sector. Freedom of thought and expression are foundational American values, and the museums uphold them by creating spaces where people can engage with history, science, art, and culture in ways that are honest, fact-based, and thought-provoking," end quote. The White House did not respond to requests for comment from media outlets to the statement made by AAM. For the KBOO Evening News, I'm Hannah Francis, with reporting from James Kemp.
Congresswoman Marie Glusenkamp-Perez drew a crowd to Battleground Wednesday night for her town hall. She talked about working in Congress and the challenges of getting along and getting things done at a time of deep division. She says she's had 4 amendments passed, which is rare for a junior member of Congress in the minority. People ask questions about the impact of Medicaid cuts. She says most of them won't land until after the 2026 election. But she's already seeing an impact on Southwest Washington hospitals not buying needed equipment and making investments. Here's part of what she said.
I've enjoyed it. I believe I'm the only first-term Democrat to have amendments approved. I've had 4 amendments passed. I had 1 opposed unanimously besides myself, so a pretty good batting average. And some of that work is, it can feel small to some people, but one of the things I'm really proud of is, you guys remember the infant formula shortage crisis? It was a nightmare. It was really difficult. And one of the drivers of that is something called the single source contracting model that WIC uses. 90% of the market follows whoever can give the biggest discount for infant formula. This has been in place since the 1970s. We basically created a duopoly where if one factory goes down, we have a crisis on our hands. And so I was able to unanimously pass an amendment that starts to investigate and consider other models of contracting for that, because it's driven up prices for all families. Everyone is paying higher because it's about who can give the biggest discount, so they just raise the prices. So trying to create more diversity and strength in that a robust system and more security for families who are having a tougher time than ever making ends meet. Another amendment, and this can feel small, but headlights have gotten incredibly bright. The old HIDs were 600 lumens. The new LEDs max out at around 12,000 lumens. It is a serious problem. And I was really surprised actually at the public reaction. And I've heard this in town halls, but I was really surprised at the public support for this. And those rules, the NHTSA rules, have not been since 1985, before I was born. And so directing a study on overall headlight brightness, I think there's a muscle memory to bipartisanship that atrophies very quickly if you don't find the things that we agree on. And demonstrating that this is an increasingly polarized political environment. We have 8% on the left and 8% on the right. And to find issues where we agree that we need a governing body that is living in the same water as all of us and is responsive to the things that we're seeing. If you can't be faithful in the small things, how are you going to fix the big things?
And Oregon Congresswoman Val Hoyle also held a town hall last night, this one in Lane County. She talked about threats against politicians right now, including herself.
It's not an easy time to be in Congress, right? Elections have consequences. We don't hold the levers of power. And the executive branch and Mike Johnson, John Thune, they are trying to take power wherever they can. My Republican colleagues in the House have handed over the power of the legislature, whether it's on tariffs, whether it's holding the executive branch accountable. So it is frustrating, but what we can do is continue to speak up and continue to show up, which is what I'm doing and what I do every day in Congress. I will also say there are elected officials that have been murdered, that have been seriously grievously injured. I know every single one in the Oregon delegation, myself included, and throughout the country, Congress people have gotten very credible threats. I get them on a regular basis. So we do have security. And what I will say is they want us to not show up. But I'm not going to back down. I will respect anyone's opinion, and we have people here with different opinions, but we can't have people being overly aggressive, or we're going to have to act on that. We want to make sure that everyone that is here is safe, and we want to make sure that people have their voices heard.
Meantime, Oregon Congresswoman Maxine Dexter is speaking out about democracy. This week, she held a telephone town hall with more than 10,000 people signed up to listen and ask questions.
Over the past several weeks, I've traveled across our district, and whether it's the groundbreaking of a new affordable housing project, a tour of a local manufacturing facility, a community celebration, or a farmer's market, I have been reflecting on what an enormous privilege it is to serve this district and community in Congress. And that's why I'm so committed to representing you and your values. I know right now it's extremely easy to feel overwhelmed and to tune out, but that is exactly what Donald Trump wants. It's his playbook. Flood the zone with chaos, instill fear and mistrust. keep people distracted and divide us until we tune out. Because when we tune out, he wins. But we can't let that happen because you deserve better. Our children deserve better. We deserve an America where hard work and following the rules pays off, where you can afford a safe place to live, where healthcare is available when and where you need it, and where your government puts people ahead of special interests. And I'm here to fight for the future that you deserve and rightfully demand. And that's why I'm hosting this town hall. It's to hear your concerns, take your questions, and strategize a path forward.
We have an online question from Hope from Gresham, who asks, Congresswoman, what do you think about the National Guard in D.C.?
Oh, Hope, thank you so much first for joining us and for your question. Just Trump's unilateral deployment of the National Guard in D.C. over the objections, let's just be clear, over the objections of local officials is yet another clear step toward martial law and an authoritarian state. And this is clearly not about safety. It's about power and control, and to distract you from the fact that he is doing nothing to make life better for people in this country. That's why I helped introduce the Safeguarding the Use of National Guard Act to increase congressional oversight of deployment of the National Guard. And what we're seeing in D.C. cannot be normalized and accepted. We have to continue to, I don't know, I can't say revolt, but to certainly not allow this to be carried forward into other cities, which he's already threatening to do from what I understand. So this is a time for us all to stand up and to say, this is unacceptable, this is un-American, and we refuse to accept National Guard overriding locally elected officials.
Now we have another question from Jim online who asks, what can Oregon do to help fight against the Republican grab for more seats in the House?
Oh my gosh. Okay. So spineless Texas Republicans are working with Trump. They're giving him what he wants. They're trying to ensure that Republicans stay in power in the House after the 2026 midterms. It is election rigging in plain sight. It is absolutely taking away the power of the vote of the people to determine who represents them. And it is un-American. California Governor Gavin Newsom, I think he's doing a beautiful job fighting back, refusing to let this happen on his watch. And he has, with many of my colleagues from the California delegation, a counter redistricting proposal that will go into effect. If it is rigged in Texas, it will have a equal and opposite reaction in California. And it is limited. It wants to prioritize independent redistricting committees. But for this time, fighting fire with fire, Newsom and the California delegation are really elevating our ability to fight back. And I'm very grateful to the governor. I stand with him. And whatever it takes, we cannot stop fighting for free, fair, and democratic elections, and to not rise to the level of rigging right now, I think, is being complicit with their taking away our power of the vote. And it is a disgusting time, but we will be judged for what we do in this time. And we have to fight for the country that we all need and deserve. And that is a republic where your vote matters.
Now, up next, we have Valerie from Hood River.
So I'm very uncomfortable with what's going on with the National Guard in D.C. And it feels to me like a silent coup where the strongman creates power in his immediate sphere. And I don't know how we can fight against that.
Thank you so much, Valerie, for calling in. And certainly, I think you're articulating what a lot of people are feeling. And I think it's the same playbook. It's intimidation and fear. And whether it's the people of Washington, D.C., or the elected representatives of people across this country, like myself, who are going to be coming back to D.C., it is clearly a strongman tactic to try to silence us and keep us from feeling capable of doing what we should do, and that's to represent the views of our constituents, which may or may not agree with that of our administrators. I understand that people in Washington, D.C. are speaking up and showing their dissatisfaction with this, and we have said repeatedly through this last 6 months that we have to stay loud, we have to stay engaged, we cannot sit back, and that is exactly what we need to do and be courageous. And I certainly will implore my colleagues to do the same. We cannot be intimidated by the military being deployed to Washington, D.C. And there's certainly a lot of irony that he would not call them on January 6th when the Capitol was being stormed and an insurrection was being attempted. And now he's bringing it when D.C. has the lowest crime rate it's had in 30 years, and they're certainly not even deployed to the areas where crime is more common. So this is nothing to do about keeping D.C. safe and everything to do with intimidation. And so thank you for your concern. I, too, am very concerned, and I will absolutely be fighting back.
And that was Oregon Congresswoman Maxine Dexter speaking at her town hall meeting this week. Trump says tariffs are benefiting Americans. Which Americans is he talking about? Now we go to global citizen commentary on this issue from Portland State Professor Emeritus Mel Gertoff. The opinions expressed in the following piece are those of the speaker.
The U.S. government's tariff income. Fuzzy numbers. Donald Trump claims that, quote, trillions of dollars are being taken in by the government on tariffs. They have not caused inflation, he says, or any other problems for America, other than massive amounts of cash pouring into our Treasury's coffers, unquote. The figure is nonsense, as I'll underscore in a moment. And of course, Trump ignores the inflationary consequences of the tariffs. It is true that government income from tariffs is substantial, so much so that some Republicans and Trump officials are apparently considering using the revenue as an alternative to the income tax. But the actual likely result of such a major change would be to harm low and middle income people, since they would bear the burden of high tariffs and would not get the promised tax relief to offset high consumer prices, not just on groceries and clothing, but also on health care and other government services. Trump's budget bill will add to the distress of low-income people. That is the assessment of the Congressional Budget Office, which has issued a study that found that the top 10% of earners in the country will receive an average boost of $13,600 per year over the next decade as a direct result of provisions in the budget law, while the bottom 10% of the population will see an average annual decrease in their income of $1,200. Now, as for those trillions of dollars in income, Forbes magazine reports that the actual figure is about $96 billion since Trump's tariffs took effect in April. This revenue, or customs duties, is paid by the importing companies and mostly passed on to consumers. Trump never mentions the fact. Forbes cites J.P. Morgan Chase's chief U.S. economist, Michael Feroli, who argued months ago that Trump's tariffs will result in, quote, meaningfully larger increases in consumer prices and higher inflation at some point this year. That's exactly what is now happening. I'm Mel Gertoff.
We have another dangerous heat warning coming up starting Friday for eastern Multnomah County and the Hood River area. This comes as a new report from the University of Washington finds extreme heat events like the heat dome of June 2021 are likely to become more common. That event killed nearly 200 people in the Northwest and shattered records. Karen Bumbaco is a Washington State climatologist.
By 2050, climate change increases the likelihood of a similar event to 2021 by an additional 6 to 175%. So that's quite an increase, especially if you look at that higher end where 1 in 3 summers you could expect to have a heat wave of a similar magnitude to 2021. More and more people are getting air conditioning. New construction is having it because of recent heat events that we've had. So it is something that will likely continue to change.
Vaccination rates are going down in Washington and across the country, and experts advise people to follow the science, not the politics, in order to protect Native Americans and other vulnerable populations. Isabel Charlet reports.
According to the Washington State Department of Health, there have been 10 confirmed cases of measles in Washington in 3 counties this year. Wendy Stevens is with the American Indian Health Commission, which formed the nation's first tribal immunization coalition. She cites data showing that the measles vaccine reduces people's chance of getting the disease by 97%.
It is safe, it's effective, it prevents measles. Getting measles immunization protects not only you, but your family, your community from spreading measles.
Vaccination rates have dropped to 87% among kindergartners in Washington. This is well below the 95% threshold needed to prevent outbreaks, according to the Washington Health Alliance. While most measles infections are not severe, health complications can occur in about 30% of cases, with about 1 in 1,000 infections leading to death. Earlier this month, the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services canceled $500 million in funding for the development of vaccines to counter viruses like the flu and COVID-19. Abigail Echo Hawk with the Seattle Indian Health Board says myths about vaccines being unsafe have been harmful to Native American communities.
Don't pay attention to the politics, pay attention to the science. We don't want to see babies sick in the hospital because of measles. We don't want to see elders passing away too early from COVID-19 in the hospitals.
Stevens adds people need to stay up to date on what is happening with outbreaks in their area and advises getting any questions about vaccines answered by a doctor.
I would encourage people in Indian Country to connect to their tribal health clinic, talk to their providers, and they can make decisions that they feel good about for their family.
As of May, the U.S. has reported over 1,000 measles cases, a 400% increase from last year, with almost all involving unvaccinated people. For Public News Service, I'm Isabel Charlet.
Vice President J.D. Vance doubles down on President Trump's takeover of D.C. Elections could decide the fate of a Democrat-controlled court in Pennsylvania, while abortion access restrictions at the VA cause consternation. With a look at the stories impacting our democracy, here is today's edition of 2025 Talks.
So I think union safety is a great example of what's possible when you actually have the political willpower to bring law and order and common decency back to the public spaces of the United States of America. So many Americans live in cities. They occupy these spaces. They know how unsafe they are.
Met by protesters at Washington, D.C.'s Union Station, Vice President J.D. Vance doubled down on President Donald Trump's decision to federalize the local police department and deploy National Guard units in the district. Vance was joined by Defense Secretary Pete Hegseth and presidential advisor Stephen Miller. Videos popping up on social media show D.C. residents shouting down law enforcement officers in the city. Critics have also noted agents and guardsmen have been stationed near popular areas with lower crime than other neighborhoods. Polling from the Washington Post and George Mason University found nearly 80% of district residents opposed Trump's actions, and the price tag for the troop deployment is estimated to be about $1 million a day. Elections this November could put legal power back in the hands of Republicans in a crucial swing state. Pennsylvania voters will decide if 3 state Supreme Court judges, all Democrats, are retained. A clean sweep in a low turnout election could give Republicans a 5-2 advantage on the court. Daniel Mallison is an associate professor of public policy and administration at Penn State. He says, given the court's past cases, it's possible lawsuits involving redistricting, voting, and civil rights could take center stage.
There were also suits in 2024 about ballot design and whether you can have ballot drop boxes. And so all these questions about how elections are run, those are going to end up at the state Supreme Court. But there's been other big issues like abortion access and right to abortion within state constitutions.
The court could also play a role in future redistricting battles. In 2018, the court threw out the congressional districts drawn by the General Assembly in 2011. More veterans and their families could soon be at the mercy of individual state abortion laws. Following the overturning of Roe v. Wade, former President Joe Biden changed rules to allow medical personnel at VA facilities to provide abortions in cases of rape, incest, or threats to the health or life of a mother. The Trump administration is repealing the rule next month, but Lindsay Church with Minority Veterans of America says it had major impacts on the lives of a small number of people it served.
Service members and veterans and their families are now going to have to figure out how to navigate state-level health care and state-level reproductive health services in order to access that care.
Supporters of the repeal contend the VA's focus should be on providing veterans with service-connected care. And in Texas, a judge ruled the state could not force select school districts to display the Ten Commandments in classrooms. The case was brought by an interfaith group of parents, some even clergy with children in schools. But the case is far from over, as another court case is pending at the federal level. I'm Simone Perez.
A Native lawmaker calls on the University of California to return all Native remains. Here's National Native News with Antonia Gonzalez.
California's only Native American state lawmaker is calling on the University of California to return Native American remains and cultural items still in its possession, despite federal and state laws requiring repatriation. Christina Onnested reports.
California lawmakers condemned the University of California campuses that have failed to return thousands of Native American remains and hundreds of thousands of indigenous artifacts in their possession 35 years after federal law required their return to tribal communities. A new audit in April found UC campuses of Berkeley, Riverside, San Diego, and Santa Barbara have failed to comply and fully utilize funding allotted to them to help rematriate the remains. Here's Assemblyman Jeff Gonzalez.
If my grandmother was found, I would expect her remains to be given to her family. Not in 1 year, not in 35 years, but immediately.
The audit recommends specific funding and conditions on that funding to force compliance. UC Provost Catherine Newman says they're investing more money, but part of the challenge is finding experts to assist.
It's actually not easy to find those folks. There are some very technical requirements.
We're the qualified people.
Lee Sisko, tribal member of the Santa Rosa Rancheria Tachi Yukot tribe.
We're the expert in this field because those are our ancestors.
He spoke with California Assemblyman James Ramos of the Serrana Cahuilla tribe, who says repatriation will help Native Americans heal from the state's historical wrongs.
Those remains do carry connections to our people, and it's not until they're properly reburied that healing could start to take place from a traumatic experience that our people suffered from the history of the state of California.
Christina Onnestad, California National Native News.
Earlier this week, the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals blocked a land swap that would hand a swath of the Tonto National Forest, a parcel sacred to Native Americans, over to a multinational mining company. As KJZZ's Gabriel Pietrazio reports, President Trump has weighed in.
On Truth Social, Trump blamed a radical left court for delaying the swap, which would clear the way for a massive mine run by Resolution Copper.
Trump is blatantly attempting to strong arm the court.
Adelita Grijalva says his rhetoric is reckless, dangerous, and even corrupt. She's running to fill the seat of her father, the late Arizona Congressman Raul, who spent his political career trying to stop mining in the area known as Oak Flat. Trump called those who opposed the mine anti-American.
Trump can try to shame us. We're not going to be silenced. For him to call us all anti-American for standing up to protect Oak Flat, it's not just wrong, it's offensive. Standing up for our communities, our land, and our future is the most American thing that we can do, and we're going to continue to do that.
Resolution Copper is owned by foreign mining giants Rio Tinto and BHP.
It's no surprise to see this president side with foreign corporations over America's natural resources, and